When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Let's go!
Bingetown, how are we feeling today? It's your boy Dave, and I am joined by fellow Bingetown host Luke. Today, we are covering episodes 3 and 4 of Invincible, aka the best show on television right now. You can find our full catalog of shows that we've covered, and if you want them in a more presentable, organized fashion, you should check out our website, bingetowntv.com. Follow all of our socials. I'm not going to say the name of the podcast again. You know where to find X, Instagram, you name it. We're all there. Lastly, be sure to check out our new Discord. We've recently fired that up and it is popping off, so definitely check it all out. Now, I'm going to get us back into Invincible. I personally thought these two episodes were rivaling maybe even the best episodes of the entire series, maybe specifically episode 4. I won't jump the gun too quickly. Maybe we'll simmer my excitement a little bit by the end of this recording, but I'm just going to hand it over to Luke really quickly for the layout of this recording and maybe a couple thoughts on the episode as well.
So mad we have to talk about episode 3 when episode 4 exists, because what is there to think about besides that Mark storyline? And I guess spoiler alert, if you haven't seen him yet, Omni-Man storyline, because that is the shit I live for. Super unexpected, all came out of left field, didn't expect this show to go this way, but I have never had more excitement than I do after the end of episode 4. So I kind of want to just roll right into it so we can get to it, because god damn, there was so much to talk about there.
Yes, sir.
Okay, so we're going to start with episode 3 called This Missive, This Machination. I have it written down as just Mark's storyline, Debbie's quick couple of scenes, and then the Guardians get a couple of scenes. The rest of it is all just going to be related to Alan the Alien, which did not expect for him to have his own, basically, I don't know, 50% of this episode all to himself, but that ended up being super pivotal to the next episode. So with that being said, let's just get Debbie's episode 3 storylines out of the way. Because I think it's just the easiest. And again, I said this on the last podcast, arguably the most boring, nothing to do with her character. It's really just how interesting everything else is, because she's still focused on getting over Nolan leaving her and kind of destroying her whole entire life. But kind of like we talked about last podcast, she ended up reaching out to Olga's contact for that soup AA meeting, or basically spouses of the superheroes. So we have her go through that scene. We could talk about that. And then she eventually ends up opening herself up to the first person that's showing her some empathy. And it backfires right away, where she now feels twice as shitty about herself because the superhero she was married to pretty much caused all these spouses to be widows or widowies. I don't even know if that's the right term for guys. But anyway, it's a pretty depressing storyline, but open the table, whatever you want to bring up, we can talk about, but that's where we're at.
No, I'm kind of with you. I mean, I don't have really too many notes on the scenes that with what Mark's mom's going through. I mean, obviously I'm very sympathetic to her situation. Obviously she is just a product of Nolan and Omni-Man and the whole situation that happened. So, but that's just really it. Like you said, all the other storylines are just so much more captivating. This is, you know, your generic widow of a wife who's just, we're reaching here. But the only thing I wanted to call out here is that her scene just parallels very well with what Kate was referring to with Immortal, people understanding other situations. You know, she met this man and she felt like he was a good match for her because they were sympathetic in their situations together about their spouses leaving dying, rather, kind of the theme here of this episode. And fuck Alana's husband.
That guy sucks.
He was great at first, and I was like rooting for them to be a couple. And then the moment she admits to the husband,
he just flips and turns.
Yeah, and
right?
That was just so, it's just like, why are you blaming her for this? Like,
exactly. If anybody should be sympathetic, it should be this group, but whatever. Who cares? It just kind of spirals into her episode 4 storyline, where it takes a whole nother step to her actually making changes in her life. But the one thing I like that, and I want to call out just because it's lore building, is that the wife of this guy who starts freaking out at Debbie was the Green Ghost that got murdered in episode 1, which that's just cool. But
someone that I'd never thought we would hear their name ever again. And here they are making an impact on the story.
Exactly. So, okay. Walk away from Debbie until episode 4. Let's crank out the Guardians next, because they are also only two quick scenes here. It's mostly about what's Monster Girl and Rudy's little adventure of them trying to normalize Rudy, because he's very weird, didn't have a normal life. And then also we have that Duplicate and Rex fight. And you kind of already just mentioned one of the coolest takeaways from it was that Kate is with the Immortal, because the Immortal is 2,000 years old. He's died so many times, and so has Kate. And I really love the line where she says, basically, if you add up all the lifespans of everybody that has been, like, when she uses her powers, she's like the same age. So all that was really cool. And then you get the Shapesmith acting like a freaking weirdo. And I feel like he's just going to be like so comical every time he's on the screen.
He is way better comedic relief than Rex will ever be.
Yeah,
he's right. Just so funny when he's just running backwards in place on the treadmill. It's not even on. That was hilarious. But yeah, like you said, it was just cool how they broke down the math of how Kate views her relationship with Immortal, because it is funny. And yeah, Rex is just continuing to take L's. I just don't like Rex as a character. That's all I really have to say about
him. Rooting pretty hard for Monster Girl and Rudy, like, to be together. Okay, I kind of like what's going on there.
In terms of that relationship, I'm definitely all in for it. I thought their scenes were very cute together. You know, he tastes the burger for the first time, which is really funny. And he's like, this doesn't look appetizing. And then he tries and he's like, okay, now I kind of understand why people like this stuff. And the fries were gone. Like, those were all cute scenes. And I'm definitely rooting for them. But this show just makes me know that we just can't have nice things. I just feel like something's going to happen to one of the two of them.
So it did seem like it was an important scene with Rudy trying to conquer his fear and, I guess, suppress any human emotions that he thinks aren't valuable for fighting, because they are so much weaker than everybody else. And they're so outclassed when it comes to, like, Viltrumites. So I do like the idea of them not training, but doing whatever they can to get stronger, because they're right now they're fodder to me.
I'd like that you brought up the Viltrumites, too, because it's funny that, I mean, I'm jumping the gun here a little bit, but obviously, like, Omni-Man is experiencing new emotions as well as Robot here. So it's just a lot of parallels going on
that
here.
That is a good, that's a good parallel for sure. Yeah, so hopefully the Guardians get stronger, because right now I only really see Eve as being the only useful person. And the Immortal, I guess. And then, yeah, so it would probably be those two. Everybody else is just straight fodder for now. Okay, cool. We got the easy buckets out of the way. Let's go through Mark's storyline, because he's going to be such a center of episode 4 that we'll just talk about his lead up into episode 4. And then we'll give Alan the proper focus that Seth Rogen deserves. If you didn't know that, that was Seth Rogen who voices him. Also an executive producer, I want to say, for the show as a whole. So he's very involved with the background.
I feel
stuff.
Like, if you didn't know that was Seth Rogen, you're living under a rock, because you just close your eyes, hear his voice, and it's Seth Rogen.
Suppresses the laugh, though.
We haven't gotten the iconic laugh yet.
Might never. Spoiler.
Alan doesn't seem like a laughing kind of guy. He seems like a smiler, big smiler.
He might be fucking dead. Who knows?
Oh, dead. Yeah, true.
All right. So before we get to that, though, we're going to give Mark his time to shine here. And I guess Upstate University is the setting that we're going through here, because Mark's finally going to college. I didn't know if it was going to progress this much, but because we knew it's been months and months since the end of season 1, and he was applying to this college. So we're kind of here. Amber and Mark and William are all accepted to this college. They're all going to be freshmen. One of the lines, I'm just going to bring it up right now, I thought was pretty funny, was when Debbie was dropping him off and she's like, don't do drugs. He goes, would they even, like, work on me? And that's, like, such a good question, because they would not. There's no way.
She's like, don't even bother trying. I wanted to, like, record that scene and send it to my mom. I feel like she would have appreciated that one.
But it was a good intro into college and, like, their new lifestyles, because they have all the scenes with, like, you know, the classic tropes of setting up with your posters on the wall. Like, some kid's going to be a little too nerdy. The other's concerned with only getting laid. You see, like, the whole college dorm set up. So pretty standard stuff here. But the more important piece, I guess, is we do get the first, maybe not the first, but, like, a more centered glimpse into the dog. I did not write his name down because I know they changed. Seance dog. Yes. So we get the seance dog scenes. Mark's trying to grow up a little bit, throwing out all of his old tools except for the seance collectible, all that good stuff. But then, I guess, in the actual episode itself, we go to Mark and Amber banging for the first time, and then we're going to flash to Alan. But all of this is happening, and I really like the angle that they took with the narrator having meta fourth wall breaking jokes. Like, what the, he's like going back and forth, wants to avoid all the sex, basically, which is kind of hilarious. Felt like Rick and Morty a little bit.
I am totally on team that narrator is going to play a role somehow into this show. I just don't put it past them at all, because It just reminds me of, who's the Marvel character from What If? Is it literally the narrator?
It's the Watcher. The Watcher.
Yeah, exactly. Like someone like that watching over everything. And because we're already talking dimensions anyway. So this was literally the first episode that I'm pretty sure ever had a narrator. And this, like, coincidentally, it's at the same time, you know, we're venturing deeper out into space. You know, it's not just within the confines of Earth, a little bit in the atmosphere of Earth. Like, we are venturing out. So I took note of it right away. I was like, a narrator, like, I literally have narrator question mark. And it's just something that I'm not going to put past the show writers to include the narrator as a character.
Yeah, everything's pretty purposeful. So I would agree with you that I hope that comes. I thought originally it was going to be Alan, but then you could tell right away it wasn't Seth Rogen. Yeah.
That's the same thing. I was thinking it was someone that we, like, it was a narrator of someone that we knew, but they just never revealed themselves. So I'm definitely, we're putting a pin in that one. It was funny that Mark was having sex for the first time, because, like, we've obviously known that him and Amber have been together a while. And I just, the realism of him not only growing with his powers, but just, like, you know, his human real life side is just really funny.
And they have those conversations, which this show takes it to the realistic level, similar to The Boys, which I love, of course. And they're, like, talking about it, like, is your sperm, like, gonna kill me, or, like, what's going on there?
She was killing the vibes for a little bit there. I was getting a little annoyed with the questions, but to be honest, they are certainly valid questions.
And it's funny because in one of the Marvel comic iterations, Spider-Man gives Mary Jane cancer because of his radioactive or weird sperm.
Sperm, yeah.
Yeah, so it's funny that they even took that angle to talk about it, but anyway, they hook up. We're flashing back and forth between Alan and Earth, but we're going to stick with Earth for now. This is where the quote-unquote seance dog shows up in the form of
Nuwalzot.
Nuwalzot. Okay. The Thraxian alien bug, grasshopper, as Mark would like to say, shows up asking for help. And I took away that he was being a little sketchy. I didn't obviously guess that it was going to be him taking him to Nolan, but I thought there was going to be something dangerous by the way he was talking to Mark and saying there's 42 well, the 42 billion bug people thing was a cool name drop too, but or a number drop, but he was saying that the meteor shower is destroying their planet, they need Invincible right now. That didn't really, I don't understand how they would have gotten that information about Invincible without it being something right. Like Omni-Man, I mean, but I didn't guess that. Yeah,
looking back, I mean, it's so obvious. Like, you're right. Like, how would the name of Invincible traveled so far anyway? And you're absolutely right. Like, looking back, it's so obvious that it was Nolan sending the plans. But my only hesitation was Nuwalzot did present themselves as nice to me. Like, they passed the vibe check, at least to me. But it's when everyone was saying their goodbyes to Mark is when I was a little bit like, things are not going to go the way he thinks they are. And it was, I think, Cecil, you know, telling him to not go, and then he hangs up the phone and he's like, that damn kid, that was like that small combat. And then Amber, there's a pause in their phone call when she's like, just be really careful, you know. And those were the moments for me. It was like, okay, something not planned is going to happen for Mark. And as soon as they land, it's kind of coming out a little bit. He's like, oh, the meteors, yeah, my dementia. And the other line I'll throw in here too with the 42 billion, which was wild, was, I spent most of my life looking for you. When he said that, I was like, that threw me off for a little bit.
But that actually does make sense, though, because of, like, the whole reveal later that they live a year.
He might have been 10 years old, when they sent him out to look for Mark, or, you know, like 13, and now he's like maybe 15 or 16 in human age.
Of their age.
Yeah.
But you brought up a couple of good things there, like the Cecil line. He kind of threw that little dig at him, which he knows gets under Mark's skin when he says,
dude, I hate,
oh, that's just like your father.
I hate when he says that. I'm totally anti-Cecil right now. I'm fuck Cecil. He's being a dick. He knows that line hits Mark differently. And I get that Cecil also felt betrayed from Omni. Like, everyone felt betrayed from Omni-Man. We get that. We get it.
Yeah.
And this is Cecil's way of kind of rebuild those grounds, I guess. But fuck you, man. Like, Mark is doing what he thinks is right. And you're just keeping him on this leash that we've talked about.
Well, I'm just going to say it now that we know that there's a chance Omni-Man's not only the villain of this entire show, he may be an ally to Mark going forward, which hopefully maybe. But the reason I'm saying that is because I thought this whole show was going to be taking the route of, like, we need to kill Omni-Man. He is basically Homelander. But clearly it's not going to do that. So now I'm comfortable with setting the microscope on Cecil and saying, like, fuck this guy now. I'm more comfortable because now we don't have Omni-Man as the way to be, like, the ultimate bad guy, where Cecil could be the ultimate bad guy of Earth mixed with whoever the king or the leader of Viltrum is. Like, those could be the two main bad guys rather than it being Omni-Man. And in that case, definitely fuck Cecil, because all the Donald stuff too is pointing to like, yo, like Cecil is fucking everybody over. He doesn't tell anybody or trust anybody.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I completely agree. Do you think if they do go with the route of Omni-Man being quote unquote good, if he makes it that long, are you okay with it? Because I personally think I don't mind it at all, honestly, because like of the things that you said, that now that we've been introduced to like a bigger bad potentially with the Viltrumites and who their potential ruler is of all of them, we've already kind of seen how broken Omni-Man was over all of this. And I like this duality that he is having here. I think it's really cool. I mean, it might be a played out kind of storyline, but I honestly am loving everything so far.
Yeah, I thought there was a 0% chance.
Oh, me
that-
too.
He wasn't going to be bad. So this is really throwing me off, but I'm okay with it taking this turn. Like, I just didn't predict it. So I'm still kind of absorbing, and we literally just watched the episode. So it's like, it's hard to pick a standpoint right now, but so far so good. This does seem like a very interesting way for this to turn and somehow make Nolan good again. And then I want to bring this up as well, because this episode is the first time I ever was just like, I like you, Amber, basically, when he calls her and it's like, I got to go. And she's completely okay with it and says like, go save lives. This is the first time where I'm cool with Amber. And hopefully if she sticks with this theme of being like a good girlfriend to a superhero that has bigger responsibilities, like, I'll be fine with her going forward. Still wish Mark and Eve get together, but who knows? Right now I'm good with Amber. No issues.
She made that quote. My note is literally, was worried Amber wasn't going to understand.
Yeah, so yeah, exactly.
I'm very happy that she was understanding. I mean, obviously we do see that she is struggling with it, which she has every right to. I mean, Mark is going to be away for months, it seems like, at this point, and he didn't really even give a clear time frame of when he's going to be back. And, you know, when she's talking with Adam Eve and she's like, oh, you know, things are great, he's going to be gone for a while. And it's like, I get that frustration, but at least as long as she is telling Mark that she's okay with it and she understands the roles, the responsibilities, yeah, then she's good.
Okay, you kind of covered a little bit of them landing on the actual planet itself, Thraxa. And then, yeah, when they say, we got to bring you to the Monarch, like, I knew in that moment that it was going to be Nolan, but like, I'm sure everyone he did. But the quote is great when he goes, it's been a while. And that's the name of episode 4. Like, that was just a good way to end the episode, because I was like, holy shit, man.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
What a moment.
Oh, when they showed that scene, every week it's this shit, and more so this show than others in the sense of the cliffhangers that I feel for this show are like, they're hard cliffhangers that I just, I can't live another week without, you know, I need answers right away. It's so hard.
Yeah. I don't know how people watched that episode then waited a week. We are lucky enough to have the screeners that we just got to watch both of them.
But now
like
we're going to
short time.
But now we might be in that bucket, and I'm not looking forward to it.
Yeah. Okay. So we're going to put a pin in Thraxa. Thraxa, right? Yeah, Thraxa.
Yeah, I think it's Thraxa. Yeah.
So now we're going to pick up with Alan's storyline. Maybe I'm wrong about this, but is this not the home of the Coalition of the Planets? Like the council, I guess, of the Coalition of the Planets, right?
Mm-hmm. That's what I take it as. I think we can refer to that until they say otherwise.
Right. Okay. Because I'm going to bring something up a little bit later. So just keep that in mind, that this is the home of the Coalition of Planets that Alan's introduced to us back in season 1 when he accidentally came to Earth instead of Uruth to check for Viltrumites and stuff. So, but this is a really cool side storyline. Like, he even got his own title card, I think. Mm-hmm. It said Alan the Alien, which they break that meta wall like all the time. And it's fucking amazing. But we find out a lot about his backstory, which I didn't expect to get, but it was really good. He is from Unopa. Yes. So this was just like a peaceful planet, and then eventually it got easily conquered by the Viltrumites. It was just like a quick flash showing Alan's planet getting taken over, and you find out that they actually did rebel back against the Viltrumites when they thought they had their last shot, because they had advanced technology, but they still got absolutely rolled over. But unlike other planets, it seemed that they at least got a few survivors out, and those survivors that they sent to space to escape and you know, be the survival of their species, they started growing other species in a way to fight Viltrumites, to be the ultimate weapon against the Viltrumites. And it pretty much failed all around except for Alan. He was the only successful specimen, I'll say that. And even him, it was pretty obvious after he attempted to fight back against the Viltrumites that he was still outclassed. So instead, what the Coalition of the Planets use him for now is he's like a talent scout to go around the universe to find people that can help rebel against the Viltrumites. And we learn all this from the leader of the Coalition of the Planets, Thaddeus, who's going to be, seems like a very important person. I don't trust him. I'm sure you don't either, just because of his last final scenes, but There's just a bunch of good dialogue scenes here. So I'll leave it at that to talk about everything before Alan meets up with Tellia. So just like that whole Thaddeus, and anything else you want to bring up there?
I really like the Alan backstory. And We were talking about, oh, is Alan, you know, dead or not? And in my head, I immediately thought he's a clone. Like, they should easily be able to, quote unquote, fix him or, you know, replace his tissue. But you're right. They kept emphasizing the fact that he has been the only successful one. And it seems like they've even continued these experiments after Alan, and they haven't gone well. So my thought was that, oh, I wasn't really worried that he was on death's row or like potentially killed. But now that I'm thinking about it, it could be over for him. But again, There's like cloning has also been introduced, you know, with the Maulers. I mean, they could easily probably take that mind of Alan and put it into a new body if they ever do get it to be successful again, you know, and maybe the new body, dimension. Or yeah. And maybe his new body is kind of like way better. Like, he becomes Vision in a sense that, you know, he just gets a way upgraded body. And who knows? I really don't know what to think. And my notes were immediately when the head council member, what is his name? Thaddeus.
Yeah.
Thaddeus. When he mentions the rat, my note immediately was, it's either going to be Alan's girlfriend or him. It wasn't like a big deal that it wasn't obvious, you know, like they showed it, but within 20 minutes who the rat was anyway. So It wasn't really too big of a deal. They made it present. But the only other thing I'll say here is that the show does a fantastic job of building up the Viltrumites. Like, we have only really ever seen Nolan. We only have seen Nolan. It gets me so hype. I'm just like, things are about to go down. I just think the show has done that so well of building them up.
The world building for the Viltrumites has just gone through the roof these two episodes, like these last two, because we haven't seen anybody besides Nolan, right? And We get three of them in these two episodes, and they at least all three end up talking a lot. Mostly in episode four, only the girl talks in episode three when she's confronting Alan in space. But I knew Thaddeus was being, my notes are like, he's being sketchy about this whole thing, because he's talking to Alan in front of the council and they're like, Okay, like, Viltrumites are getting more aggressive. They're taking over more planets. And then they ask him about Mark, because a Viltrumite hasn't fought a Viltrumite since the Great Purge, which was, I assume, the name of the original Viltrumite sweep of all the weakness, killing everybody before they started expanding. So I think literally Viltrumites never fight each other until this instance, which is crazy. And then you can comment on that if you want, but I wanted to also point out that I thought I saw on the council, who didn't have any lines, you saw the lion species from last season, which that's the species that hates Viltrumites with like a passion, right?
I don't know if they hate. I know for a fact that someone had brought up to me that they are just basically a species of people that are just looking for the strongest. They just always want to fight whoever the stronger is. So it could mean that because of that, they hate the Viltrumites, like that they'll never be as strong as them. But I just also know that they maybe consider them as like rivals, I guess. I did make note of that line, because I don't think it did not seem like it was the same one that beat the shit out of Mark from season one, because I feel like there would have been some sort of interaction between the two. Like, oh, you remember that time? Like, I beat you into the fucking...
Right.
He just looked very similar to him, but it's definitely
that's
that
what
species.
I assumed. I do want that species to come back into play, because in season one, he was a tank. Like, he actually was destroying all these superheroes and Mark on top of that.
The club right down on Mark in the chest. That was so badass.
So good, yeah. And then let's just finish talking about this storyline, is that ending scene when he's in space. And that scared the shit out of me when he's like about to tell his girl, he's talking to the girlfriend, and then right away, like, he just gets ripped out there by the three Viltrumites who are interrogating him about Omni-Man abandoning the post. But he is, I guess, if you want to just say morally good person here, like, he just keeps his mouth shut. He's not a rat, and he just takes this beating, and the beating was fucking intense and crazy, but it was so cool how they did the physics of everything in space. Like every time he was getting punched, the blood would freeze instantly and like slide off the screen, and just the way his eye was like, oh God, the whole thing was incredible. I didn't think that it was going to end this way, where he's just in pieces. I actually thought he was dead right there on the spot. So the fact that he survived to get put into that like hyperbolic chamber to heal, I feel like he didn't die. I really don't know. Cause if he died, why even have that scene? I guess that's to show Thaddeus is the rat maybe, but it feels like Alan is someone that's going to be around.
That's exactly my thought. And again, with everything that we've been talking about with the whole cloning process, and then they've found Alan once before. I'm sure they can somehow find him again with the DNA and blood that he has. I don't think this is the end of Alan, but I will agree that the beatdowns in this show are legitimately the best. I just love how like the sound effects of the punching, just how much blood it is. Like I do get sick to my stomach kind of just like watching this show because it is so gruesome, but Lord knows I fucking love watching someone get their fucking ass kicked in the show.
The sound effects are amazing.
It gets me hyped for some reason. No matter who's getting their ass kicked, it could be Mark getting their ass kicked, it could be Omni-Man. Not that would ever happen, but like it's still just, it's fucking hype.
Okay, so I got 2 points left and then we can move on to episode 4. The first is, put it on the board right now, is Alan gonna be alive or is he dead?
I'm gonna say he's alive.
He's alive. Okay, I'm going to say the same just because it feels weird to not have just killed him in space if he was going to die. But so we'll both guess that. Okay. And then my last thing I want to say, and this seems to be more of a writing issue I have, is that restaurant that he basically got his ass beat out in front of was right next to the planet of the council, right?
If it was, I guess, what would your comments be then, like, if that was
my
the
whole
case?
Thing is, why would the Viltrumites not destroy the council? Yeah, if that is the planet and they knew how to find Alan, because Alan, even if that's not the planet, they knew how to find Alan and Alan was on the planet at some point. So I don't understand how the coalition of the planets is avoiding the Viltrumites just destroying them if they know they exist.
It's got to do something with Thaddeus, like him providing them information. Like if he is the in to finding all planets that are unconquered, then why not just like keep that one planet around to find other planets, capture them, and then just save it for
that works. That totally clears it up. And that might be what it is. I thought it was worth having the conversation because I don't understand why they don't just, they're right there and they could have just walked down and destroyed everybody. But might be a good reason.
And plus they did mention that the Inopians at some point like had a technology that they thought was capable of taking down Viltrumites. And I feel like even though it didn't, the fact that they thought it could kind of makes Viltrumites think that, we can't just go guns a-blazing anymore into places. Really.
Okay, I'm fine with either explanation. I just need I need an explanation in the future, which I'm sure they'll give us.
You're right. When you asked the question, that was kind of my immediate thought, is like they could just easily just rain down hell. Like, I mean, they conquered that bug planet. What would have been less than a day, probably, if not for Omni-Man and Mark.
Exactly. So, okay, cool. All right, we flew through that pretty quick. We're going to keep the pace going because this is just how we're going to cover Invincible. Just get hype, talk about the fun stuff. And now on to episode 4. It's been a while. And we're going to save Mark and Omni-Man and the Bug Planet for last and clean up the other buckets and just go through them because there's a lot of random scenes sporadically spread out. And we're not going to kill the vibes once we start hitting Thraxa because, geez, man, that stuff was, that was hype. So I'm going to suggest we just start with the two separate Mauler scenes. One happens pretty early and then one happens as the epilogue, as this show likes to do. When the credits hit, they give you another like 2 minute scene. So that is all featuring the Maulers. And I'm on record saying this, I love these guys. I think they're such a great side character and they do show their importance every once in a while, especially with Angstrom's up. But here it's really just seeing the implications of the Maulers when they go through this cloning process and they know which one is the original, and shit just hits the fan in the most like hilarious, like predictable way ever, where we see them, we know that this is the first time they've ever done this, where they know who the original is, and it immediately turns to King Mauler, who gets killed by poison by the clone who knows he's a clone. It's just fucking hilarious and perfect. And it just quickly puts them back to square one, but also like gives us that understanding of who these characters are and basically why they actually need to do this, not knowing who the original clone is. But just throw any comments you want, because that's they're just fun. They're fun every time they're on the screen.
They're absolutely fun. And you're right. Whenever the Maulers come on this like the screen, I'm just edge of my seat, because it's either going to be something like pretty funny or something important to the story, at least, that is happening. And they are just two great characters that I love when we like just do little check-ins on them, because it just shows that they are important. My thoughts is that I just wonder, do you think they're going to he's going to follow through with what they were talking about with creating now just an army of Maulers? Or do you think this clone is still just going to make it two?
I think the purpose of that final scene was to say, like, stick to what we've been doing. Two is fine. That's how they survive. So yeah. I don't think there's going to be an army of them. And that would also kind of cheapen the thing we saw earlier in the season when we saw all the multidimensional Maulers. It just cheapens that a little bit. So I don't think we'll take that route. Yeah, I
agree. I was going to make a counter argument if you disagree with that and basically say that we already got, like you said, the multiversal of Maulers. Why would we want 100 regular Maulers if we already had that with multiversal ones?
So they're going to do something in the second half of this season that's going to be wild. I hope in like my heart of hearts that they somehow end up turning good in a way and are like true allies, which maybe, but who knows?
I guess I'm thinking just what is their purpose right now? I mean, they don't, not that I need them to have a purpose. It's like I said, I love following their story no matter what, but right now they had Angstrom get them out.
Weaknesses to Angstrom. Like I'm saying, like they end up working with Mark to fight Angstrom because he has that knowledge, but I don't know. Cause then like, how does Angstrom even fit in with the Viltrumites and General Krieg? Like that's a whole separate conversation of like, I don't know how that's going to work, but it's going to be there's going to be some clash. It's going to be crazy in the second half of the season. If you haven't seen the writer's comments on episodes, like basically season two that came out recently, what the writer said was that episode four is the craziest thing they ever attempted up to that point. And then episode eight's even crazier than that. And I'll totally agree. Episode four is the wildest episode of the series. So if he's saying this is like, this doesn't even compare to the season finale of season two or the season finale of season two, like the hype is already so high in my mind after this episode. We'll see though.
Episode eight, looking forward to it.
Yeah. Okay. So next we're going to take the William/Amber/Eve storylines here. They kind of separate, but it's super quick here. At first Eve shows up to Upstate University looking for Mark, finds out he's not there. She's been having a rough week and it just directly turns into her going to fight Killcannon, who's stealing some sort of power source that robot at the time, now Rudy, but it looked like it was like the Guardian's base or something like that. Maybe it was the, I don't know. It was like a power source that he put in that instantly upgraded his gun. So she was fighting against that. And maybe that comes back into play. Maybe it doesn't. Maybe the whole purpose of this bucket or these storyline scenes with Eve was to have her fight him again, realize that she can't save everybody, and then get a little bit depressed and then go back to her parents and revert back to what she was at the beginning of season one. I don't know. That's sort of where I'm at right now, because she did sandbag William and Amber later when she was supposed to go meet him for breakfast. But it seems like Eve is on a bad path, and I don't know like what the next steps are, but she's depressed.
Yeah, she went crawling back to the parents, which I was upset about, because I feel like that was her conceding to the father, at least admitting that everything he said was right. And I hated that for her. Maybe we're just not as good of podcast experts as we think we are. But like, was that something in season one? I feel like that must have been something that was like glossed over in season one when we had the whole robot becoming human arc, because that thing, it meant nothing to me, to be honest.
It's not familiar at all. Yeah.
Yeah,
maybe it was a new concept that was introduced, but I don't know.
You're right. I couldn't even tell if that was genuinely the Guardians of the Globe's headquarters. I just legitimately thought it was just like a place Eve had just like conjured up. And then she's saying, oh, you came back to this place, you know, and he's talking as if like there was like some conflict here and like she's still there. It was confusing to me. I wasn't really sure how to take it, but I felt bad for Eve, obviously, who could not save the couple during her fight with what's his name, Killcannon.
And dude, her powers, man, I always harp on this, but like they're just insane. Like she doesn't even use them to the full potential, I feel like, but like it's just so cool, like how she flies, she grabs the bomb.
It interesting because I feel like when she captured him when he was falling over the edge or whatever in the ball, it's just like, okay,
just squish or something, or turn him into.
But she opts to
sand.
Throw him, and it's just like, ah, you could have done so much more.
Exactly. But that's it. It's nothing else is really important for her scenes or Amber and William. So let's move on to, I have Debbie and Donald mixed together here because of the timing of their scenes, but we'll take them one at a time here. And I'll just start with Debbie. It's a direct continuation of her depression that was caused by the superhero anonymous or the spouse anonymous spouse, whatever the spouse superhero shit. Yeah. You know what I'm talking about. So she's still depressed and she goes and visits Nolan's grave. And so you can tell that she's still holding on to these feelings for Nolan. And she has a couple of visits throughout this episode just to, you know, check up on her and see where she is mentally. And the first person that visits, tries to visit her, is Donald. And so she's actually not there when he goes to see her, but he does see the explosion spot where his original, where the original Donald from last season died and exploded when he was fighting Omni-Man. And he goes over, picks up his glasses, and that, you know, he's basically having a Westworld moment, like a, what the hell am I? Like, am I real? Like, is this what's happening? Cause he's like, he's having an identity crisis because of Debbie's comment earlier this season. He wants to figure out what the hell Cecil's not telling him. And then we have that scene where he goes back to Cecil's and he sees, he like tries to hack in, sees the film, sees the footage, but then tries to prove if he's a robot or not, I think is what he was going for. Kind of like Westworld or Blade Runner, where he cuts his arm to see what's inside, but he's bleeding. So I don't know, but the knife bent too, which is another thing. Is he just like a strong, I don't know. So throw some theories at me and I'll tell you how good I feel about them. Because
I can think of theories for pretty much everything else in the show, but this one just eludes me completely. I legitimately have no idea what the gain is from Cecil not telling Donald of what the fuck's going on.
Right.
I don't get the angle of that. I don't get Donald's part in all this, and how, if maybe was he like originally somehow a soup, or the only thing I guess I'm gathering here potentially is a theory. This is just me right on the spot. You asked me to think of a theory and this is me doing it. Is something to do with maybe Alan and how like that technology of like creating Alan and like a superhero to go against Omni-Man. Like the only thing I can think of is like Cecil somehow got his hands on that technology and is using Donald as the experiment, I guess, because now like we did see, I think, I don't know if you mentioned it or not, but the tip of the knife bent. So yes, he was bleeding. It struck something that was hard enough to bend the knife. And so I guess that's my only connection I have right here, is that it's maybe something along the lines of the technology that the Inopians had to create Alan.
Okay. So you took it as like he cut into his arm and hit something that bent the knife instead of it taking enough power to bend the knife to even cut his arm. That's how I took it. Like his skin was really hard and he didn't realize it, but you're taking it as there was like metal or something inside him.
Yeah, I guess like if it, like I was thinking maybe the flesh on him, you know, is soft, like normal, but like his bones are specifically what's strong.
Okay. Cause if it's my route, it's more likely, this is a stupid theory, but I'm just saying it to kind of put a, you know, like to encapsulate this a little better, is my route is I thought the knife bent because the skin was hard, like he is part Viltrumite as an experiment from Cecil or something to make stronger humans, like you're saying. You're taking it like he is literally just like a robot and potentially just like AI.
I think I was combining the two theories. Like I didn't think necessarily robot. I just think maybe he's just the beginning product, like a prototype of, again, like a programming, like Alan of.
I like that idea. No, that's definitely
like the flesh wasn't fully, you know, maybe what they were looking for, but they got the core of it down with the bones. You know, the bones are. Yeah. I legitimately, this is me. You asked for a theory. This was me thinking of one right on the spot, and that's all I could think of.
No, this is so weird to say that this is one of the most mysterious and interesting storylines of this show when we're talking about fucking aliens and stuff. Like it's crazy, but it is interesting.
The next question is like why, and I have no fucking idea. It's just the only thing I can think
of. Cecil.
To strengthen the defense of Earth is the only thing I can think of. But yeah, Cecil's definitely sketchy. Sketchy.
Yeah. So let us just finish Debbie's storyline and then we can get right to Mark and finish this strong, because there's two more scenes after Donald has his identity crisis. And that is Art, the suit maker of soups, shows up and talks to Debbie, gives her some messaging and tries to like talk her through getting over Nolan, which directly leads to her eventually throwing out all. Well, I guess she sees Cecil first. He's trying to pay her off to say like, hey, let's reel this in, like stick with me, I'll take care of you guys. And he's done with her bullshit to get leverage over them. So she kicks him out and then she throws out Nolan's books, who, spoiler for the other buckets, find out that there's some hidden secrets in here that Nolan wants Mark to read so he can either learn about his dad more or find some sort of weakness for the Viltrumites that he hid in plain sight. So yeah, that's all books, of Debbie's stuff.
what do you think the significance of are the books, I guess, is what I'm asking. Do you think he wrote them? Do you think, where do you think he pulled these books from?
I think it was just his way of having a plan B, of have some sort of either weaknesses or information, maybe coordinates of where Viltrum is, so Mark can go and save his dad. I think it's just going to be like a back, like some information that, you know, Mark, that Nolan made as like a backup plan.
Yeah. Now that I'm kind of thinking about it, maybe because we don't know how actually old Nolan is, and have they ever confirmed that like Viltrumites age?
Yeah, they're
slower.
Way slower.
So what then I'm kind of thinking maybe is, you know, they weren't all like a set, like they, it wasn't a series of books. Like it wasn't a set of books. It looked all random to me. So maybe they were souvenirs from places that he's conquered in the past. Maybe potentially, you know, he's gathered books and information from all these planets that he's been to in the past. Maybe he makes notes in all of them, and some of them might be emotional notes, and maybe that will help Mark understand his thought behind, you know, weaker species. But that's the only thing I can really think
of. Also humanize Nolan a little bit more to make Mark more willing to forgive him and then go save him. I don't know.
Yeah. So I guess I'm taking them as they're going to be like journals almost of his travels.
That is a very realistic possibility too, which I'd be fine with, because Nolan's dying, not dying words, but final words are like, remember all the good I did and then go and read my book. So there's a chance that it's totally just like journals, which I'd be satisfied with that answer as well.
I hope they're journals. Like I want a perspective of him.
Young fucking Nolan in his prime, just murdering planets and shit.
The moment we get young Omni-Man is going to be, backstory is going to be so cool.
Yeah. All right. Well, speaking of Omni-Man, let's dive into it, because I've been waiting to talk about this storyline. We're back on Thraxa, and it is right after Mark gets mind blown that his dad is now the king or the monarch of this planet. And we step away for like 1 second to get a quick backstory of Omni-Man and like what happened in between season one and the season one finale and this episode. And I did not expect this at all. For some reason, I thought Omni-Man at the end of the season was like just caving on Earth and going back to Viltrum. Yeah, I know you were kind of predicting that he probably just went somewhere else, and it seemed like he was about to kill himself. He was about to fly right into a black hole because he was so depressed. Mm-hmm. He's just flying through space mindlessly. Like you see his facial hair growing. He's been just going straight for you don't know how long, months, whatever it is. And he's ready to finally just kill himself. And that's when he sees the Thraxan ship being sucked into the black hole. He saves them and then becomes the king of Thraxa and ends up meeting who we find out later is his, I guess, his wife as well as Andressa, and then having the little baby brother, Mark's half alien brother. So all of that just gets covered in the first couple of minutes. And yeah, did you want to bring up anything else about that? Cause I thought it was just sick watching him like look into he goes past a sun. He goes right up to the event horizon of a black hole. It's just epic how strong they are.
I know when we were watching together, I definitely was letting out some like, that's so cool. The fact that he is able to just withstand being next to a black hole is crazy. Just so cool. Yeah, it's such a great depiction of strength here. The brother thing was crazy to me. I mean, I'm not surprised, obviously, with like how his Viltrumite mindset is that, you know, he went to this planet. It was cool to see him conquer this planet, but in a way that he wasn't familiar with, by helping people rather than just murdering everyone. And so that was really cool to see how he kind of flipped the script there. But the half brother thing is very interesting. I like the design too of the brother. I like how he's purple. I thought that was really cool. I think they has like, he might have some like antennas or something growing. With the whole culmination of like this episode in my head, like the only thing I could think of is Omni-Man was just trying to build a little mini army of just little babies and just to fight the Viltrumites back again.
There's like, no way that's what he was doing.
He was just going around. I mean, it works out well because obviously they only live for a year. So he could just be like, all right, yeah, I could live a life yeah. here. Next planet, let's roll up. And the kid's going to grow up pretty quickly too. Apparently, like he's pretty close to speaking. And that was like my first thought is that he's just going around. And he's trying to build a little mini Omni-Man army to fight Viltrum.
But definitely threw me off when we saw the little brother. But how hilarious was their makeout?
I needed the replay. I needed the full replay on it.
Literally watched it twice. It was so funny.
It was shocking. Shocking.
But Omni-Man says something here about the kid and about Andressa that kind of, I'm surprised I didn't question in the past about the Viltrumite's policy on procreating and just having kids like this. But Omni-Man says like, it's a very simple rule. We're only allowed to procreate with species that are similar to us. So then basically we can adopt them as full on Viltrumites essentially. And That's why Earth counts, of course, but this place is an exception and he shouldn't have been allowed to have this kid, because if the Viltrumites find him, they're just going to kill him. And that's essentially what happens. And so Omni-Man is saying, like, I'll start training you right now. Let's get you pumped up. We got to make sure that we can defend these people. Mark's not having any of it because he's just over his dad. Why would he be the one that has to have the responsibility to protect who his dad's kid is after he almost destroyed his own planet? All that's great. And even you were getting a little hype. You're like, oh my God, just fucking train. Just go through a training arc. But then the bad guys show up, of course.
Like, I know your dad is possibly the worst person in existence. But dude, if he's offering you a training session, come on. I was so ready to get it, like a little training montage. I was so ready for Mark to just say yes. And then the explosions come in and Luke and I are just like, there's no fucking way this is happening right now. And it fucking happens right now. Like you said, right before Mark can answer the question of whether he's going to train with his dad, it's three Viltrumites who are just sent, literally they just beam down their whole bodies. Why wouldn't they? They're just they could just survive the hit anyway, so that devastation alone is just unimaginable. And I was not mentally ready for this at all, and I'm so glad we got it.
So it's the three Viltrumites that killed Alan too,
right? So they killed Alan and then they made their way here. Obviously whoever's feeding them the information is pretty good at their fucking job. So Viltrumites are definitely scary.
Yeah, like they show up and instantly Omni-Man's like, I'll go take them on, but you got to get my kid and my wife to safety, which they do. And before like shit hits, really, really hits the fan, we have this moment of Mark and Andressa getting to know each other a little bit. And it makes everything, it's almost like we're paving the path for Mark to eventually forgive Nolan. Like we're seeing the empathetic side of him here. So like they go to the cave and what is the one Viltrumite says when he shows up after like they bond for like 2 seconds and says, ah, the great Nolan fathered a child of Earth and he wants to test his power. Oh, he's like, if you survive, you'll come with us. And he just classic Invincible gets his ass fucking beat.
I loved that line. Luke knows, again, we watched it together and he said the great Nolan. I immediately reacted because it's like we never were alluded to where Omni-Man Nolan's ranking was in the Viltrum Empire. It just felt like maybe every Viltrum was like the Saiyans. They're all basically the same power level of warriors. They get sent out to different planets to get conquered. But the fact that they're calling him the great Nolan, immediately I knew that he obviously means a lot more in terms of combat strength for them than these other regular Viltrumites. And that line got me so hyped. But again, just watching Mark get his ass kicked will just never not get old, to be honest. I just
dude,
think it's so
when
funny.
When the first Viltrumite that's there is like messing up Mark and he just puts his finger right on his head, just finger, and starts pushing him down, and then Omni-Man like shows up.
That was legitimately like an anime moment. Just when you know you meet someone and they're just their power alone is just keeping you pressed to the ground. Yeah. It literally felt like I was watching an anime with that scene. But I was geeky, I was fangirling so hard at that moment.
The fight was short, but it was fucking awesome. They're just going at it so hard. And eventually Nolan just has the best little like full on flat hand slice to open his guts out and then just fucking shoves the cave piece into his stomach. And you think he's dead.
The stalag.
But I didn't want to guess.
Was it coming from the ceiling or was it coming from the ground? I don't remember.
I think he got the ground one, but
it's a stalagmite because the stalactites hang tight to the ceiling. So
yeah,
where we go, we're not total
idiots.
Yeah, we're not total idiots. It's funny because Omni-Man has obviously also been introduced to Mortal Kombat, and I've like seen some of the finishing moves that he does in there, and these finishing moves are straight out of fucking Mortal Kombat. You know, just the fact that he's just opening him up and okay, he's dead. Like you don't need to do anything else, but instead he jams the fucking stalagmite into his open wounds. And it's like, it's like the Mortal Kombat, just such unnecessary finishing
fatalities.
Moves, but fatalities, but they're just awesome to watch. But I jumped the gun because he's not actually dead.
Right. So. I'll just read the summary points of all these next pieces and then we'll just talk about it all, because this is like really the climax of all the action that goes on between the Viltrumites. Because after Nolan kills that quote unquote kills the first one, they go back to see what the damage is of the other, like basically what happened to the rest of the planet. It's almost all destroyed. Everybody around is dead. And there's the two left, the two Viltrumites that participated in killing Alan, they show up and it's just like an instant split into a one versus one where Nolan's going to fight the guy, Mark's going to fight the girl. They're both like going back and forth. Mark's mostly getting his ass beat. Nolan and the other Viltrumites are kind of going back to back. You could tell Nolan's still like the guy, but he is taking a lot of hits here. And they're helping each other. Omni-Man's helping Mark out whenever he can, but he basically gets him to the side and says, yo, you need to fight like you're going to kill or you're going to die. And I'm going to die trying to help you. And then everybody here is going to die. Everybody on Earth's going to die. So fucking stop pulling your punches. And this is like the first time of the whole show where we have a glimpse into how strong Mark is. And he's finally like on the punching side. And dude, I'll just say right now, I love how the girl Viltrumite fights with her hair and like the blade at the end. That was so fucking cool.
From the moment she was introduced, her design, I thought, was incredible. So I like how first the hair kind of loops around like a scarf almost, and the knife kind of just like hangs over her chest.
Yeah.
And then she whips it out. I'm like, okay, that is clearly going to be a weapon. And she starts swinging her head around. I'm just like, this is so cool. She's like, not only is she a Viltrumite, but she also has like a blade attached to her hair. Like, it's just, it was so badass. These fight scenes, they are definitely incredible. Every one of them is choreographed to perfection. The CGI is always amazing. There's just really not much to say because they're just always going to be great. The blood, of course, just makes me nauseous still. It's crazy. It's like, I know it's animated, but there's just so much of it. And like, they are taking tough hits. Like, there is that flash of each one of them getting hit. And it's like, you know, a knee to the chin and just like brute punch to the square under the nose. It's not for the faint of heart. You know, it's definitely gruesome.
And then predictably, in the very tropey way that it is, Mark is about to kill the Viltrumite and then hesitates. So he gets stabbed. Mm-hmm. But then Nolan shows up, murders the shit out of the first guy by like slamming his head together, which was fucking incredible.
Again,
and then ends up having to fight the girl too, who ends up killing the shit out of her as well, like ripping her jaw out too, which they deserved it. Both of those two deserve to die like that.
Oh yeah. And obviously seeing Omni-Man get so worked up in his fight against the guy was like, just, it gives you the hope for redemption, you know? He's talking about like, I'm going to kill you for what you did to these people. Like, he would have never said that 20 years ago when he first landed on Earth, you know, and now he's sympathetic for these people that can only live 1 year. You know, it's the anger that he's showing. And then Mark is also, now you're kind of really seeing the family ties here, because they both get so fucking angry when they see the dead bodies around him. And that's when Mark kind of flips the script too on the girl. Mm-hmm. So they are very similar, man. It's just a matter of like how much they understand their emotions. You know, Mark obviously grew up around humans, so he knows it. Whereas, you know, Omni-Man's kind of new to all this, but they are similar, man. They both get real mad real easy, and they can just fuck you up.
One thing I'm hoping for the future of this show is that there are more Viltrumites similar to the girl that have unique ways of fighting, because they're all Superman, basically, right? Like, they fly, they're strong, they're fast, they can do all that. That seems like it'll get boring if you're just, everybody's just the same, fights in the same style. But this girl, like, using that blade weapon, like, they need to keep including things like that. Otherwise, everybody's just going to be a copy and paste of Nolan. So I hope they keep getting creative with that, and I'm sure they will. Like, we've only really seen four Viltrumites, right? These five on the planet, right? So and four of them fight the same exact way. So I just hope that they in the future don't all fight like that. But let's talk about the Guts Viltrumite that we thought was dead, shows back up at the last moment. It looks like he almost breaks Omni-Man's spine. That's he like knocks him out.
That was gonna be my comment, is I legitimately don't think Omni-Man is gonna be capable of walking next time we see him.
Well, they fucking heal in 2 seconds. So
I guess
it doesn't,
that's
even
also
matter.
True, but they definitely emphasize that back shot in a way that
I think it was just
damage
to show that he can't fight anymore right now, which is what exactly it was, right? Because then the guy, the Viltrumite signals back to home base and says, like, mission accomplished, basically come down and let's retrieve Omni-Man.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I wouldn't put it past them for them to be able to heal a wound like that, but I definitely took it as Omni-Man, that was a blow for any Viltrumite. Like, any Viltrumite that's taken that blow is going to be hurting from that one, I think.
But also, but we'll see. If you get handicapped like that, you just fly. It doesn't change any, it's not like you can't move around.
Yeah, you're
like,
right,
the difference before, you would just,
you're
float
right,
instead
why
of stand, so it doesn't matter.
You're right. There's probably no chance, but I just, you're either,
that would
way,
be hilarious though if he's in a wheelchair just, the rest of the series.
Yeah, I don't, you're absolutely right. If he can fly, what would be the point of breaking his spine for the, like, just for the purpose going forward. So you're definitely right. I didn't really think about that, but I was like so stunned when that happened. They have their moment. They just beat the guy and the girl, and they're like, okay, like time to start cleaning up. And I'm like, boom. There wasn't music. Easy. There wasn't any music. There was this conversation. I was like, something's fucking happening right now. And that guy shows up. It was really cool too, because he's grasping his stomach. Like he's keeping his insides in his body. Like he's not just flying around with them pouring out. Like he literally is holding, like he has the phone in one hand and his arm around the other. And just, they're fucking dedicated. Those
and he'll probably heal and still be a thing in the future.
That's for sure.
All right, so these final two scenes are the Viltrumites actually showing up, capturing Nolan, and saving this Viltrumite that called them in. And that's when we brought up the line. He says, remember the good I did and read my books. Probably nothing more to talk about there, but the final thing that happens, which got me fucking hype, was General Krieg, shout out One Piece, shows up and tells Mark that he partially proved himself, as in he was a good enough fighting force that they're going to let him live, because their whole mindset is just, if you're strong, you survived. You will survive. If you're not strong enough, you were meant to die. So he's telling Mark, you have no choice. You're a Viltrumite right now. Your father is going to be executed for his crimes of abandoning the post, and you're going to go back and finish the job. We'll check in soon. Prepare. We're fucking coming. And like, scene like that is just so hype. We got the face of a Viltrumite that we can hate, that's not JK Simmons, which I love, because it's just, it seems like we're on the path that that Omni-Man's gonna be good. So it's just like, I love it. And this General Krieg guy, he might not even be the top, like there might be another target later, but he seems like a good face of the Viltrumites for a bad guy for the time being.
Total Zod vibes from this guy, but like you said, there could even be someone absolutely higher. It's just so funny. He's given the details. He's like, Mark, you got to do this mission. And Mark's like, fuck you. And he just, not even hesitation, just punch right to the face.
Knocks him the fuck out.
I just, Mark taking punches is never not going to be funny, but what a display, man. Like I said, this is the first time that we're seeing like multiple Viltrumites come together. We've only ever seen Omni-Man. Mm-hmm. And what we've heard of Viltrumites has all been through word of mouth. And obviously we've seen the displays that Omni-Man put on, but it's still just like, they've built these villains up to be so great. They're just the embodiment to me of just evil. They have no empathy for any beings besides themselves. They just literally look to breed and just continue their clan. I just love everything about the story that they presented so far. And this guy is definitely going to be a fucking problem. And the other comment I have is, in terms of like the execution, like I'm not hoping Omni-Man dies, but I hope we at least see some Viltrumite get executed, because I would love to know what they do in order to kill themselves. You know, like like what kind of machine tool would it take for them to execute a guy? So that's something just thinking, to look forward to.
I feel like we might not see Omni-Man for the next couple episodes, but Mark, is he just going to wake up on Earth, you think? Because he doesn't know how to get back to Earth. I feel like that could be the cold opening. Like, he's like, how the fuck did I get here? And now he has to figure out how to save Earth.
Mike's kind of thoughts immediately were that it made it sound like, obviously, the insects weren't completely wiped out. So I just feel like the remaining ones will kind of help him recuperate and then help him find a ship to get back home.
True.
His half-brother and the mom are still in the picture. Yeah. Andressa. So I think she would have to be the one to save him, if he's not already healed by the time he fucking wakes up with the fucking Viltrum blood in him.
Which he might be. How does Angstrom fit into all this? Because it seems like we have two bad guys and neither of them are even close to the same path. So
yeah, and like
however that fits in is going to be wild.
It's just everyone hates Mark is how I'm taking it. Like Angstrom's mission is to kill Mark. And then obviously the Viltrumites would like to take Earth. And if they need to kill Mark, they'll do so. But like, again, like you're saying, how does that tie into an ending that makes sense and becomes relevant?
Yeah.
But I don't have any fear of that being a disappointment, because I just know this show is going to be incredible. Everything about the show has been so enjoyable to watch. I'm speechless. This show is so good, man. It's so good.
Yeah, and there's always those extra moving parts to not forget about. Like the Lizard League is back, and we have that Kraken that's could be something for Cecil. Like, how is that play into
in.
This?
Yeah, we're
like,
four
Jesus,
episodes in.
Man.
We have so much. Like, the Maulers still got their thing going on.
Yep. It's going to be fucking fun. Eve has to have a huge part, obviously, like, however that works. And the Guardians themselves haven't really been too pivotal, but they will be. So all of these moving parts are going to come together, and the second half of the season is just going to be so good. So I guess the next time we're going to be talking, or we'll be dropping a podcast, it'll be after episodes 5 and 6. But through four, man, like this season, the show is just top tier. If you want to say S tier, it's S tier, man. Like there's almost, it's just one of the better written shows out there. And I just, I'm happy every time I'm watching it. And I just, let's fucking go, man. Season 2 has been awesome.
All righty. That's going to be it for today's coverage of Amazon Prime's Invincible episodes 3 and 4. Like Luke said, we're going to be covering episodes 5 and 6. So wait for those to release on when episode 6 airs. If you like what you heard, give Binge Town TV a follow on all of our socials, X, Insta, YouTube, dot, whatever, you know, social media you use. We're most likely there. Be sure to join our growing Discord. We absolutely love chatting with everybody. It's an absolute blast. So definitely be a part of that. And lastly, check out BingeTownTV.com for our full podcast catalog of organized TV shows. Anything you've watched, we've probably covered it. And once again, we are BingeTown TV, and thanks for listening.
You're listening to the Geekscape Network.